She picked what I dub as one of the hardest industries to be in, liquor, and is really blasting it out in the tequila lane. Let's listen to Mara, how she's tackling tequila and the industry. She brings us some really great insights. Thank you so much for being here and being part of the Lady Boss podcast. I'm excited to have our listeners hear about you today.
Thanks. It's so nice to be here, Courtney.
Okay, so I'm first going to profess that I know tequila is very, very on demand and very popular right now, but I am not a tequila drinker or much of a drinker or at all. So I want you to tell us, what's it take to be in the liquor business?
A lot of crazy, I think. I guess I just was a glutton for punishment because it's so highly regulated.
Right.
You know, the laws that are applicable are still the ones from 1933 post prohibition. Huh. And really every state operates independently. So it's like dealing with like 50 different countries. So, the compliance part of it and navigating that is really difficult, in the alcohol business. So that's probably one of the things that's like a, you know, one of the biggest hurdles for people.
So that also can be an opportunity if someone is smart like you and has a legal background, you know. So I always look at barriers to entry in business. So if the barrier to entry is very low, you have a lot of competition. If it's higher, you have less competition. Is that actually been a positive because of your law background?
I think for me, I found it easier to navigate the system because of my legal background. So understanding the three-tier distribution system in the alcohol world and figuring out how to do filings and federal registrations and how each state operates. So I was able to get my head around it more easily. But I do think that there are enough people out there who have that expertise. It might not be that the founder understands that, but there's always someone they can go to rely on. So I'm not sure as far as a barrier to entry, just because you see so many celebrities entering the tequila world. And, but, you know, they may not have to navigate that system on their own like I do.
Mara, would you explain in a little more detail what a three-tier distribution system is?
Yes. So basically it means that I'm considered a supplier or an importer of a brand, so of a spirit brand, tequila. I have to sell it to a distributor, so basically a wholesaler, the wholesale level, who then sells to retailers, bars, and restaurants. And then they can sell to the end consumer. So there is no way around that system. I can't sell, you know, I can't sell to a Target. I can't sell direct to our local Binnie's. I have to go through a distributor in the middle, who controls that and is far, and they sell to that retailer, bar, restaurant.
So is that why liquor companies aren't selling online?
So there are ways now to sell online. But a lot of traditional liquor companies don't. But there are some like white label platforms. So, like we use a white label e-commerce platform to sell on our website, but it's still not direct consumer. So even though it looks like it and it's seamless, it is still following the three-tier distribution. There's still a wholesaler level in there, and then still a retailer fulfilling those orders and sending them out. So Inspiro Tequila, for example, is our website. Once you go to shop Inspiro Tequila, it's actually managed by
the wholesaler,
you know, by actually like a retail part of it. Yes, who fulfills it. And then there are marketplaces. So a lot of big brands do sell on marketplaces. So there are marketplaces that are allowed to sell like Reserve Bar or for, you know, delivery, same day delivery, like a Drizzly. But again, it's being fulfilled by a retailer. And there's a wholesaler in the middle there that's selling it to the retailer.
Well, it's now making sense why there's so much margin in liquor.
Right. I mean, there are a lot of people taking their cut.
A lot of people got
to
step on it.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I know this was your pandemic pivot, but can you tell us, you know, of all the things you could have started or done or launched, why tequila and why at that time, at that moment?
In a former life, I was an attorney at a large law firm. And at the time when I decided I wanted to start a family, and I was getting, you know, great experience, huge deals, it was really exciting, but I wanted to start a family. And at that time, there were no female partners in my entire department. So I had no role models to look to see how could I possibly balance and manage having a family and being at a large law firm. So then I made a career pivot at that time and moved to McDonald's Corporation and worked in corporate strategy. That actually sparked my entrepreneurial spirit, which people may find interesting because I still was at a large corporation, but I was part of a project where we were like studying customer insights and consumer trends and ideating, coming up with like new concepts and ideas. And I found the whole ideation process really fascinating. It's kind of the first time in my life where I started really thinking about, oh, I want to start my own company, do something on my own. So I started looking into opening an ice cream franchise, and not the best idea for Chicago and our weather. But then my corporate career like came to a screeching halt. So I became pregnant with my oldest, who are twins, and was put on emergency bed rest. And then I had a preemie twins, and I made the decision to stay home. Fortunate to be able to make that decision, but that is something I never saw coming. Like, actually, that was probably the biggest, you know, change in my career trajectory that I didn't anticipate. And I don't think anyone who knew me and how myopically focused I was on, like, working my way up the corporate ladder ever saw that either. So then I was home, and I was home for many years. I subsequently had a third child. But I always was thinking of concepts and ideas, knew I wanted to start something of my own. I wanted to see it come to fruition. I wanted to build something myself. Maybe I probably just watched too much Shark Tank and listened to too much How I Built This. I don't know. But I just always found those stories really inspirational, hearing about other founders' stories. So constantly think of ideas. And then I started thinking, like, really, you know, kind of more seriously about starting something and doing it in tequila. I just kept coming back to tequila. I had been looking at like another CPG product, and it just wasn't like resonating with me. And I thought, but I think there's something there. I'm a tequila drinker. I've been a tequila drinker for many years. Just became my clean spirit option when I was looking for kind of a better option that fit into my gluten-free and more active lifestyle. And I just kept hearing all these women tell me that they're tequila drinkers. I thought, okay, if all these women drink tequila, why are brands not focused on this consumer? And I just really saw a market opportunity and started researching, discovered that 50% of tequila consumers are female. Women make, you know, 80% of the purchasing decisions, or the main entertainer in the home. And I thought, well, why don't brands like focus on her in spirits? And in the spirits world, she's just generally overlooked. So I thought there was an opportunity to, you know, create something really customer-centric that I personally would like and other thoughtful female consumers would like. So in February 2020, impeccable timing, I'm like, I'm going to start a tequila company. And then the entire world shut down. So, and then, you know, I couldn't get to Mexico for production. That became
so
difficult.
Did that push you back? Or did you end up launching later?
Well, it did. It also, so I had to find people. I had to find consultants down in Mexico to help me because I couldn't navigate this. I couldn't get there to find a distillery. And for me, it was really important to bring a female perspective to a very male-dominated industry. So I was really set on having a female master distiller bring this to life. So, you know, I narrowed down the list. I was looking for a female master distiller. I needed someone to connect me with the master distiller I wanted. So I found some consultants down there to help me, to connect me with my master distiller, to help me find a distillery using like virtual tours of distilleries. So it took probably a little more time.
But. So besides a female master distiller, okay, I understand that. And I'm a consumer of your brand. I bought it for gifts. What is the lens that markets to women? How would I know that was a woman's brand? Because I that just went right over my head.
Yes, and I'd say, you know, men like it too. And it's not that men don't drink it or love the tequila. It's just that our first and primary consumer is a woman because she's like an afterthought. So when I'm talking to her and I'm talking to this thoughtful, educated consumer who cares about what she eats and drinks, so she chooses tequila because maybe she feels better the next day than drinking something that's really sugar laden. She cares that our tequila is confirmed additive free because the vast majority of tequila brands use, you know, coloring, flavoring, glycerin. So the fact that we're confirmed additive free because she cares about, you know, she's looking at the labels of everything else she's eating, and she's also going to care about what she's drinking, or that we use organic agave in our production. So I think there's a number of reasons. I also think just from the bottle design, which you've seen. Yep. So I wanted a bottle that I would want to display on my own home bar. I wanted something really sleek and sophisticated. It's very purposefully made slender in the center, so it's easy to hold and pour, because I found the really big, like round, stocky bottles hard to manipulate.
Right.
So all those things were done thinking of this consumer. I mean, we did focus groups and surveys to understand even the taste profiles. What does she look for in tequilas? What brands does she like? So then I set out to create the sweeter tasting notes and make a really sippable, easy to drink tequila with very little bite, but without using additives. Because generally when you know, smell or taste the like sweet notes of vanilla and caramel, it's because they're adding coloring and flavoring. So I said, okay, we kind of know what she's looking for and what she likes. And now can we make a cleaner version of it?
Wow. I mean, I think just between the regulation and all the recipe, I just had no idea how much goes into it. So what has been the biggest learning now that you have a product, you're in significant distribution, but you're also changing a male-dominated, male-run world, even though tequila is, you know, in vogue right now. How do you get around some of the friction of the wholesalers who don't want to take you, the restaurants who don't want to put you up? I mean, what's been your make or break?
Yes. And it's still really hard to navigate. And I'd say not just as a woman coming into an industry where there aren't a lot of women, because there are many industries where women are underrepresented, right? But I think actually coming in as an outsider, what I did not know until I got into the spirits world is that it's like kind of this like insular world where everybody seems to know each other. And it's hard to kind of earn credibility in that industry. So that's why I did a ton of homework. Like I really did my research to get up to speed to make sure that when I went in, I sounded intelligent as far as what I was talking about. And then I think as far as, you know, retailers, bars and restaurants, wholesalers, it's still hard as a small brand. Listen, I can't, they're huge brands. I mean, that occupy
massive, you know, marketing budgets. Yeah,
exactly. So we need to pick our unique, you know, kind of our unique selling attributes and go into people who care about those things, right? Like we're certified woman owned. Oh, I think a lot of retailers want to see some diversity on the shelves now, right? To represent their customers. So they're gonna be hard pressed to find a certified woman owned tequila brand that's confirmed additive free, that, you know, so there are some of those things that we found that, especially like in that, you know, area of like retailers and things like that, that they're really excited about it and excited to bring in and try out smaller new brands. But it's kind of, I think, hopefully having the story behind it, that the story, the authenticity behind it, that it's not like a figurehead with like a whole team of just industry veterans. You know, I have an all-female advisory board. That's like an anomaly in this industry. Sometimes you'll see, you know, the head person is a woman and they'll say it's all women, you know, run or founded. And then behind them, you see just all, you know, white male industry execs that have been in forever. And that's not what our team looks like. It truly reflects the people that we're trying to speak to. We're distilled, owned, and led by women. So,
okay, but Mara, we've got, I could name off all the celebrities that are, you know, co-branding from Skinny Girl on, and there's zillions of them, you know them better. So why is Inspiro Tequila going to succeed?
I think a couple of reasons. I think people actually want people who care about learning about like additives, they're going to want additive free, meticulously crafted. Like once you know you're looking for like a real quality, clean tequila, that's why you would choose Inspiro Tequila, and that you want it to be a sippable, really easy to drink. It's not a shot tequila. It is something that you can drink on its own, on the rocks, in a light cocktail, but you don't need to mask it with a bunch of sugar and like a sugary drink.
It's the health food of tequila.
It's a better for you and better for you option.
Is any part of you, like, you know, you've got kids and people, you know, addiction and alcoholism is on the rise. We talked, you know, today about somebody who owns a chain of counseling center. You know, so that's a big part of drinking. You know, drink responsibly is a thing until you don't. I mean, how do you look at that when you just think about that product in general? And is some of the ways you did it, no sugar, no preservatives, help people, you know, drink it more responsibly?
I don't know about that, but I think about it as like we're not positioned as like a party drink or a party tequila. We're positioned as like women who have like really busy, active lifestyles but still enjoy themselves and have like and live fully, that this fits into just like a piece of their life when they're celebrating or entertaining or having a girls' night, that they still enjoy themselves and that they can enjoy themselves with a clean drink option without the fear of feeling really lousy the next day. But that we just fit in to those kind of like just a part of, you know, a piece of your life, like one of those slices that you're fitting in between, you know, everything else that you're doing. And that's how we think of it. I don't look at it as like people slamming shots at clubs. I mean, that's actually the exact opposite of how we market. I wanted everything light and bright and sleek and sophisticated and elevated. None of our pictures are like, and because it didn't resonate with me, that's part of why I started this. Using scantily clad women in dark club scenes just did not speak to me as a consumer. I'm drinking tequila because I'm at, you know, having fun with my girlfriends on a Thursday night, girls' night in, or, you know, celebrating Thanksgiving with my family. That is more of kind of like the experiences where I'm, you know, kind of imbibing and drinking tequila.
It's cool. I mean, you've got, it's a certain runway. You've taken a certain lane. You're just going to run it down. But I mean, you know, any one sort of standout thing that you have to do to be successful over the next couple of years?
I think we have to stay authentic. I think authentic to the story, authentic to who's behind it, people understanding, because I do think people care about the brands they support. Listen, I buy women-owned, I gift women-owned. It's important. It's just part of my personal like ethos of what I try and do. So I think people who care about that, care about supporting independent, you know, small brands, brands that give back. I think that's a bigger factor for people now, brands that have social impact. We provide grants and mentoring to other female founders to help them on their journeys. I just feel very fortunate that so many women gave their time and guidance to me that I want to do something that I can, you know, to give back. So I think that's a big piece of it, how we stay, you know, authentic. And I think the other thing is always keeping a scrappy mindset. Yeah. You talked about this before about like all these things you have to do. And like, I'm willing to put in all the work. When you talk about barcodes, like I filed my own barcodes. I filed my own registrations. I'm registering in another state right now and they need a criminal background check from the state of Illinois. So I figured out how to get online, get a criminal background check, submit it myself. So figuring out how we can be as scrappy, keep our team as lean as possible. I think a lot of people try bragging about like how big and how many people they employ and how big their teams are. And I'm kind of the opposite. Same with the, you know, make it the ultimate of like, we raise this much money and we have this much funding. And I'm a little bit of the opposite mindset. Like, I'm really proud that with the two full-time people wearing like 10 hats, we've built it this far and how much we can do and how much can I do using consultants and 1099s.
Oh, totally.
And it provides a lot of flexibility for a new brand, right? I'm learning constantly. So it allows me to pivot really easily by using people on a consulting basis and get seeing if they work.
When you don't need it, with real-time resources, getting resources. That's so smart. Exactly. I literally, you know, think that before people take on full-time people, considering like, is this something we really need to have in a full-time, you know, seat on the bench? Mm-hmm. Or can we just use this person? And if they don't meet us as they pivot, we can get a different resource, which is another benefit of having a contractor rather than having somebody sitting on the bench. So good for you. I mean, I think, you know, the words ultra premium, I think being scrappy is an incredible lesson for entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. You know what? There's time to hire people. There's time to do all the things, but there's always time to grind. It's just a grinding job. And if you don't do it, or you don't want to do it, go get a job at McDonald's. Because honestly, it is just twice as hard. You know, it's four times as fulfilling, but it's twice as hard. And I think people have to know that when they consider entrepreneurship.
Yeah, it is not for the faint of heart. Like, no. I work more now than I worked when I was at the largest law firm in Chicago. I mean, I never thought I'd work harder than that. But because it occupies my brain all the time, and it's also because it's my baby. So when we talk about like how I got started out of my kitchen, during the pandemic, it's really that I was willing to put in a ton of work. I did a lot of due diligence. I studied the category. I got certified by the CRT, the governing body in Mexico, for tequila and the production and history of tequila making. I mean, I read books, I listened to podcasts, I went on webinars, I reached out to, you know, industry veterans, like I joined women's organizations, I created an entire community of support also behind me, because kind of no matter how much due diligence I did, I knew I needed, you know, people to help and provide feedback and guidance. And I went in with nobody, I mean, great, great friends, but no business contacts, no one, and I had to create a community from scratch. And have this amazing network of like female founders and leaders that I feel has been like the biggest perk of the whole thing and the whole entrepreneurial journey. But that requires a lot of work, and there's no getting around the hard work. And I'd say, you know, I hope that, you know, my message inspires other women that it's possible and you can pivot, or you could enter into a new industry and re-enter the workforce later in life. But that you're not going to get around the hard work that is required to do that.
Let's talk marketing. There are so many well-funded, huge social media presence, celebrities co-branding or branding their own tequila. So what do you do when your social media is what it is, growing, but small, you have boots on the ground yourself, and, you know, you could run up against Skinny Girl and they've got 300 reps in the field talking to restaurants and bars. How, I mean, goodwill and hard work is great, but how do you compete against that?
Yes. Well, I think there are a few things. One, I feel like we're finding our niche, like within that, like it's a really big, big category, like $1.3 billion category. So there's a lot of room in there. And yes, I'm not going to be able to compete head to head with The Rock or George Clooney. But I think there's room and people are looking for ultra premium. People are starting to care more about additive free and having additive free brands, which 90% of the tequila brands, the brands that everybody's drinking, have additives. So once consumers are a little more educated, so I feel like part of our job is to educate the consumer.
And how do you do that?
And that
how do you educate the consumer?
Based on digital, getting it out through our, you know, we kind of have all channels running as far as digital marketing. So newsletter, social media, paid ads.
Okay.
And I think it's also relying on some of those partners. Like I told you, we have three customers, right?
Yep.
So that's the level of getting it to the consumer level and educating the consumer. I also do a ton of events. And that helps get the word
like
out too. Speaking events in front of like huge groups of women. I spoke to the Women in Law Coalition. I went to speak to women in middle market deal making, like getting in front of that consumer.
Okay.
So that's a consumer level and educating them and telling them about the brand story. But then we talk about having, you know, retailers as our customer and wholesalers, the distributors. So I think getting distributors that are really on board and excited for a new woman-owned brand that's additive-free, that's ultra-premium, premiumization is that's what's exploding in the spirits world right now. So having the ultra premium brands, and I think I have to hope that they're also going to be our advocates because they're the ones carrying around the book of all the different brands and hopefully promoting Inspiro Tequila, which we have found that they are doing.
But it's with them, right? They're salespeople in a channel and they've got all the lists and they got the book. And unless you're, you know, they're driven by better commission or free, whatever their why is like the button you have to hit. It doesn't, they're probably not looking for a new brand to sell when they've got their thing they can take orders on. So how do you, I mean, is this a literally one at a time relationship building?
It is. And I think it has come from the top down. Honestly, I choose distributor partners where there's buy-in and they want us and that messaging is coming from the top down. Okay. So like our distributor partner in Illinois is the largest spirits distributor in Illinois. And it's coming from the top who wants Inspiro Tequila and wants the sales team to do a good job with Inspiro Tequila. So I think that's how we get a lot of buy-in. You know, I try and go against like banging down people's doors and making them take us. Like I want them to want us because that's the only way they're going to do anything with the brand. And same with retailers. That's why I spend so much time, you know, I went and I go and try and educate retailers at all these stores and at bars and restaurants, tell them about the brand so that they know about it, so that they're going to recommend it because they have more information and they're not getting that. I mean, yes, celebrities come in and have a photo op and go there, but they're not like going and doing staff education store by store to make sure they understand the brand well. So because we're small and because we can be really very focused on certain areas, we have the ability to do that. And also it's me representing the brand. Yes, you can have a huge team of, you know, 300 people out there, but they may not know the brand that well. They may not be able to describe it as, you know, for sure as well as you can as the founder. So while I can do that, and there's only one me, but while I can do that.
No, I love it. I mean, I'm picking the scab as hard as I can to get you to go, okay, uncle. And you're just not going there because you're like, look, like a hard head is one of the best tools in entrepreneurship. I mean, there's a million things as a person who vets businesses, buys businesses, runs our own businesses that I'm like, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. And you're just like, no. And it's not against your business, but I get it. When we get these beliefs, so I think it's important to like have that passion and that vision for what it is and then have the financial side to make sure that you're not putting your head into a wall that is telling you no. And it sounds like you're really like managing both so well, which is really great. I mean, I think because you can write checks and you know, stay alive for a long time, but it's like, when do you get traction? And I like the fact that you've got all these financial metrics in that background, because that's really going to serve you, you know, as you have to do other kind of paid advertising or scale yourself up in a way where you're writing checks to get that training and that messaging out there. I mean, it sounds like a really, really fascinating opportunity. Does not sound easy, but I hear you don't like the easy button. So I think I'm betting on you. I know you're going to do a good job.
I appreciate it. And I think there's also a constant iteration, right? So when you said like believing in it, yes, but I'm not, you know, I'm not going to stuck to one thing and this is how it'll be done. I mean, just today I was like reviewing and revising our mission statement and vision, you know, because we did it 2 years ago and I thought it's due to, you know, for a relook. So everything we do, I'm looking at that. I'm reevaluating agencies. I'm reevaluating our strategy. So I just think, I hope that by being really strategic and thoughtful about everything we do, that, you know, will create a success.
If you look forward a couple years, what would success look like?
I think for me, it's going to be those little things. And as I build, I mean, I get really excited when someone says that they've heard or seen my brand before. Every time I get that from someone, I'm like, really?
Sure?
I go, how? Where'd you see it? Are you sure? You know? So I think having brand awareness where people were like, you know, acknowledge and know about Inspiro Tequila for me would feel like success. I don't need to be everywhere in the country. I don't need to have distribution everywhere. Because as I said, you know, every state you go into, you need a different distributor partner. It requires, you know, feet on the street. It requires a lot of support there, but building it really thoughtfully in some key geographic areas and knowing that we built that, and then also having the D2C platform and just having women know about it. Oh, I've had Inspiro Tequila. I tried it at a friend's house or someone brought it to my house as a gift. I feel like for me, that's, you know, that's success.
Is making money important to you?
Yes. So, and I'm not going to pretend like I'm totally altruistic. It's less about me personally making money. It's more about it becoming profitable and successful. Like, you know, I measure, I'm very stuck on numbers. I actually have an accounting background, so I'm constantly looking at, like, you know, gross margins and percentages and things like that. So for me, it's about, like, how do you grow it and seeing growth. And I look at dollars, but I also look at, like, case volume, you know, getting to certain volumes to me and having those targets is kind of something I also look at.
You know, our younger son is in the business school at Miami of Ohio, and he just did a 2-month project on tequila. I met you at the tail end, I would have called you. But what the basic concept was that Gallo is doing a roll-up of tequila brands, and, you know, you get to a certain percentage and the multiples are just enormous. So is an exit something that you think about? Like, I'll grow this to this, because I think your story, nice bottles, female-owned, made this way, gluten-free, is very sellable, even probably an easier path to growth than to do it organically. Would that be something that would excite you?
I think so. At some point, I feel like I'd have to see it grow to a certain level, though. Like, I wouldn't want that to happen too soon before I had the opportunity to really see my vision come to light. Because as you know, because you've been through that process, once you do that and turn it over to someone else, it becomes their
vision.
Their vision. And I feel like I really want to build the brand and build it well first and kind of on my own. But that's not to say that's not something at some point in the future, but I'd want it to be, I think, more established and turn into kind of what I'm hoping for at first.
Yeah, so I hope you don't mind. I just have to go back to this. So the money question is, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs get into these things and they've got big visions and great at execution. I mean, you've got a really robust background, but is your family, you know, basically writing checks to keep this vision alive, or is the company keeping the vision alive?
I guess that would be our family. I mean, I'm bootstrapped. So this is us, you know, funding this.
Investing.
Yep. I'm investing myself, right? So when I get a choice and I get a lot of, like, I get pitched a lot of angel investment opportunities and things like that. And when I get a choice, I'm deciding, do I believe in myself and my vision and my company? Or do I want to, you know, invest in someone else? So that is the choice that, you know, I've made. I also think I did not come up with this idea in my dorm room. So, right, you talk about, like, your son studying this in college. This is not like a dorm room idea. My husband and I have been working for many, many years before, you know, starting my entrepreneurial journey. I was actually very risk averse when I was younger. I wanted to be a Supreme Court justice, like, you know, the most stable job because it's for life. So I never saw, like, entrepreneur at all in my world. So I think because I did this later and I can have a little more risk tolerance at this point, that's kind of, you know, we're going to fund this. And I'm hoping what will happen, though, is actually that it will be the company funding it and that I get to put the money back in to continue to grow it. That is ideally what I hope this can become, because I'm sure also, as you know, not that we wouldn't ever consider taking outside money, but once you do that, that also changes things a lot. You're answering to someone else. You have other people's voices you need to listen to.
Yeah.
It may not be exactly your vision. You have to be really careful who you're aligning yourself with. I mean, I've just heard too many horror stories, actually. Yeah. So I have to be really thoughtful about that.
Yeah, and you're just in a season of life where that's an opportunity, and it can be a risk too, because, you know, my husband and I have gone, you know, kind of organically, always grown, invested, not taken outside money, not really levered up. And all those things are just choices that you make to support the lifestyle you want. But I think it's also when you have some, when you have traction, you're sort of in that year mark where you're 2 year mark, where you'll know, do I have traction? I don't know. Is there a way to put the gas down faster to get somewhere? And, you know, could that change things? And I mean, those are just decisions we make as we're on our journey and customers come to us with opportunities. And that's really neat. So in a tequila world is 90, it's 90 bucks a bottle, I think, or something, 80 bucks a bottle?
No, our Blanco's like about 50, somewhere between 50 and 53.
Not the wholesaler I bought at.
Really?
Yeah, it was more than that. So I was like, is that average or low end? Or I just have, don't have a baseline. Is that considered high end tequila?
It's an ultra premium. Our Blanco is like a 50 to 53. Our Reposado, because it's really unusual, it's the only tequila that's been aged in rosé wine barrels. So that one is more expensive because the process is just very meticulous and laborious. But that one's $70, about $70 okay, so on the shelf. $70 to $73. If you got the rose-colored one,
yep,
that's going to be $70 to
$73. Would you just call it ultra premium?
Yes.
Okay, ultra premium. I knew I liked you, but things that are ultra premium, I really like. So
I love it.
Oh, that's good. Well, I think that your background is so interesting. We have been talking to so many entrepreneurs who had big jobs, big experience, smart people, but they get into the world of entrepreneurship and they realize there's no, you know, person to carry your luggage and make your plane tickets and, you know, do the legal and figure out a bottle and get etching. And it's hard. It's really hard.
It is.
Seems that, you know, I mean, I think the lawyer is a lot executing, and I don't know about McDonald's, but like that execution background is going to serve you well, because at the end of the day, you can hire 20 people, but if you don't execute, you'll never make money, because you got to execute on something. It doesn't have to be right, but you just have to really get after something. And I think your vision and just your sort of ability to sort of check the numbers and stay the course is are all things that are really going to serve you, but it's a super competitive, difficult market. So, you know, congrats to you for picking out a really hard one. You know, I don't know what business is easy, but I know liquor doesn't, it looks easy, but I know it's just hearing about this is not easy stuff. So in Spirit Tequila, we will pass the word. We will make sure that everybody's drinking responsibly, which is something I care a lot about. But I love the lens on women. Now I'm even behind it even more. I love women-owned businesses, but I think that all those thoughtful things you did to the consumer, we've got to get that message out there and support you in every way we can.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
For being on the Lady Boss Podcast.